So, good evening, and such a pleasure to see everyone. I'm Jean LaValle. I'm one of the community Dharma leaders, and I'm a member of the Bellingham Teaching Group. And so, what I'm going to do tonight is to give a brief overview of what a practice period is, because we've kind of made it up. So you probably haven't, unless you've been here, haven't done one before. And then I'm going to give some foundational kind of teaching on our theme, which is renunciation. And then we're going to divide into small groups and start Dharma conversations with each other. And so that's going to be the format for the 5 weeks. There'll be a Dharma talk, Dharmatini, Dharmet, whatever you want to call it, and then we'll talk together, and then we'll come back briefly to look at next steps. So what is a practice period? Well, there's a tradition in the Theravadin monastic community that continues to this day, and that tradition is called the Rains Retreat. So at the time of the Buddha, monks mainly practiced alone, wandering in the forest or wherever. But during 3 months of the year during the rains, they couldn't wander. They couldn't really walk in the forests or the fields because the water was covering the plants. And if they walked through the water, they would damage the plants. Not good for the farmers and the crops. Also, underneath the water, there were snails and leeches and snakes and frogs and other living beings that they didn't want to harm. And so they gathered together for a period of community for study, for practice. It was actually a time for newer monks to get teachings from senior monks. So, and that tradition continues in monastic monasteries around the world. And it's kind of a metaphor for our practice period in that we often practice alone. We are studying this or studying that, but not studying it together. And so this is a time for us to come together, focusing on one thing and on the various facets of that one thing, and to talk together, to share our understanding of the Dharma and to share our practicing of the Dharma together, which isn't something we always get a chance to do. So that's sort of the history and the foundation for this. So we also hope that it's a chance for us to clarify our Dharma practice, like what is it that we want to do. So last year, our practice period was on the first foundation of mindfulness, which is mindfulness of the body. And this year, our topic is renunciation. And we've chosen that because it's a key element to understanding and practicing the Buddhist path. So I want to talk a little bit about renunciation. But first, I want to recognize a couple things that's true in this room. And the first is that there's a wide variety of experience in this room. I mean, some people have been practicing a very long time, may have renunciation practices as part of their practice, and some people are quite new to the practice and may never have considered renunciation. And so we really hope that this material is useful to everyone. And we want to recognize that we're all householders. And monastic life is set up to support renunciation practices. Several of you have just come out of retreat, and you experienced, I would guess, some of the ease that comes when a monastic sort of style of discipline, you're a part of that. There are a lot of things you don't have to think about that are very helpful for the practice. But you're back now, and you've probably noticed a difference. So certainly much of what the Buddha taught was directed at monks, but a great number of his suttas were directed towards householders. And so Part of what we want to do during this practice period is really understand what renunciation could be for a layperson, whether you're a partner or a parent, an activist, a friend, a worker. What would renunciation mean for a lay person? So the last thing we want to recognize is that we practice for a variety of reasons. Some of us are practicing the Buddhist principles because we'd like a happier and calmer life now. Some people, especially in Southeast Asia, are practicing for a happier next life. And then there are people who are really seriously practicing for freedom, for nibbana in this life. And so regardless of why you're practicing, I hope that this topic and how we explore it is helpful. That's the goal. So renunciation is an interesting word. And I'd like to start by getting a sense of, you know, the kind of reactions we have to that word. So we're going to have a little group experience here. So if you would close your eyes and take a deep breath. And I'm going to repeat a sentence. And I just want you to be aware of what you notice. So the sentence is, renunciation is a path to happiness. So notice whatever there is to notice in your body, in your mind. You might notice curiosity, resistance, excitement, doubt. What do you notice? So now, take a deep breath and let the word happiness roll around in your body and your mind. You might think of a happiness moment, an event, an experience, some small thing today that you thought, I'm happy in this moment. How do you know you're happy? What qualities of body and mind do you notice? Do you experience? So take a deep breath, and let's try that with renunciation. Let the word renunciation roll around in your body and mind. You might think of a time in which you said no to something, you gave something up, an activity, an object, an attitude. What qualities of body and mind do you notice? Renouncing. So, open your eyes, take another deep breath. So, the sentence, renunciation is a path to happiness. So, what did you notice? Anything, anybody want to share? Any reaction, response? Yes?
Well, I was completely positive. It's just, I have experienced this. This is true.
I didn't plant her. That's great. Yeah. Yeah, Annie.
Well, my thought was renunciation is giving things up. It makes life simpler. So therefore, that must make you happier. Another part of me said, I wonder what she should give up.
Excellent questions. We'll have at least 5 weeks to consider that very thing. Anything else with the sentence? Okay, how about happiness? What did you experience with the word happiness? How did you know you were happy? Greg?
Kind of a lightness, carefree feeling.
Okay, lightness, yes.
I felt calm.
Mm-hmm. Calm.
I felt present.
Present. I felt my facial muscles move. I mean, I was smiling. Yeah. Anything else? Linda?
Sort of a sense of warmth and ease.
Okay. So, did anybody have any physical or mental reaction to the word renounce or renunciation?
I guess I thought of it being kind of like a little bit of short-term pain, kind of like ripping a Band-Aid off, and then really not that big a deal afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when I hear the word, I kind of go, "Ew." But when I actually thought about an experience, it felt different. And so I think that was kind of interesting. So, yeah, Greg?
I got a sense that I don't renounce much. That it's mostly not letting things go, but holding on to things.
I believe the Buddha had a lot to say about that very tendency, and we're going to talk about it. Yeah. Yeah. Anything else?
A little bit about failure, or whether I'm, if I give something up, will I be able to stay away from it, or will I backslide?
Oh, yeah. So a little bit of fear about, yeah. I'm not sure I want to go there because failure is not something I'm interested in. Yeah. No, and I think that's, I think that's probably present for more than you. Yeah, what?
You know, for me, there's a certain heaviness to the word renunciation. There's a kind of formality to it, a kind of real deliberate quality to it. And I'm sure we're going to explore other connotations to it, as weeks progress. But that's...
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons I wanted to do this is that as we embark on our investigation, and if we begin to decide to make some choices, how do we know what the result of those choices are? And so beginning to be aware of our bodily and mental reaction is a really good clue. I mean, it's very helpful. So it's a tool for us. And so I thought we would, start with that, and we'll sort of play with it as we go through. The dictionary definition starts out with a formal rejection of something. So it's kind of interesting that you use the word, it has a formality to it. Other terms are abstention, refraining, going without, giving up, repudiation, and abandonment of. And the Buddhist, in the Buddhist context, the Pali word for renunciation is nekama.
Nekama.
Listen to him. Nekama, which means freedom from sensual lust. Freedom from sensual lust. So we're going to be looking at different words, actually. And one of the things that I encourage you to do is to think about a word that works for you. Now, when James Barres teaches Awakening Joy, which is a 10-week course on the cultivation of factors for happiness, one of the things he says is, joy may not be your word. I mean, you may actually find joy kind of off-putting, or you may have resistance to joy. So find a word in that spectrum that you can actually embrace, that you can engage with. So I personally am not a joy person. It was not a good word for me. The word that works for me is ease. So as we think about renunciation, you might also think about words that allow you to approach this subject, with a little more openness. I like the word restraint myself, but we'll see how it unfolds. So I would say that y'all are a lot more open to the idea of renunciation than many people were at the time of the Buddha. And so I want to read you a sutta, the Buddha's words to a man named Tapusa, who was a householder, and he had a question about this renunciation thing. And so he went to Ananda, and as it happens in the suttas, Ananda said, "This calls for a talk, householder. Let's go see the Blessed One." And so, as it is in these suttas, this question is repeated like four times, but I'm only going to do it once. So, as you say, this calls for a talk. Then Venerable Ananda, together with Tapusa the householder, went to the Blessed One, and on arrival, having bowed down to him, sat to one side. And as he was sitting there, he said to the Blessed One, "Tapusa the householder here has said to me, 'Venerable Ananda, sir, we are householders who indulge in sensuality, delight in sensuality, enjoy sensuality, rejoice in sensuality. For us, indulging in sensuality, delighting in sensuality, enjoying sensuality, rejoicing in sensuality, renunciation seems like a sheer drop-off. Yet I've heard that in this doctrine and discipline, the hearts of very young monks leap up at renunciation, grow confident, steadfast, and firm, seeing it as peace. So right here is where the doctrine of this doctrine and discipline is contrary to the great mass of people." "So it is. So it is," the Buddha says. "Even I myself, before my awakening, when I was still an unawakened bodhisattva, thought renunciation is good, seclusion is good. But my heart didn't leap at renunciation, didn't grow confident, steadfast, or firm, seeing it as peace. The thought occurred to me, what is the cause? What is the reason why my heart doesn't leap up at renunciation, doesn't grow confident, steadfast, or firm, seeing it as peace? Then the thought occurred to me, I haven't seen the drawback of sensual pleasures. I haven't pursued that theme. I haven't understood the reward of renunciation. I haven't familiarized myself with it. That's why my heart doesn't leap up at renunciation, doesn't grow confident, steadfast, or firm. Then the thought occurred to me, if having seen the drawback of sensual pleasures, I were to pursue that theme, and if having understood the reward of renunciation, I were to familiarize myself with it, there's the possibility that my heart would leap up at renunciation, grow confident, steadfast, and firm. So at a later time, having seen the drawback of sensual pleasures, I pursued that theme. Having understood the reward of renunciation, I familiarized myself with it. My heart leaped. Then, quite withdrawn from sensuality, withdrawn from unskillful qualities, I entered and remained in the first jhana. Rapture and pleasure born from withdrawal, accompanied by directed thought and evaluation." And the sutta goes on to talk about moving into the second jhana, the third jhana, which are absorption states of deep and profound and pleasant and useful concentration. So if your heart didn't leap up at the thought of renunciation, you're in good company. And really, these few verses of the sutta actually answer the three questions that we're going to be looking at for the next couple of weeks, which is, what is renunciation? Why would one do it? And how would one do it? So we'll come back to the sutta or what it says, but I don't know, maybe I've been reading this too much, but when I got to the line, "It seems like a sheer drop-off," I thought that was hysterical. So, but I don't have a TV, you know, so what do I know? All right, so I want to look at an overview of some other ways of looking at renunciation that other Dharma teachers have used to give us kind of the playing field here. So what is it that we're giving up? Well, we're certainly, one activity and mindset that we're renouncing is sensual lust. Remember, the Pali word for renunciation is freedom from sensual lust. So John Fries, we'll be dedicating parts of our third and I think fourth evenings to a fuller discussion of this aspect of renunciation. And as a preview, I'm quoting from John, honestly, I didn't know you were going to be here. I would have asked your permission. Mm-hmm. Renunciation is not about deprivation or giving up pleasure or joy. It is trading the pleasures of the senses for a more lasting happiness, which is actually what the Buddha was doing when he went into the first jhana. Ultimately, the highest purpose of renunciation is to help us along the path to the goal of ending suffering. Okay, so we're looking at renouncing, restraining, giving up sensual lust. We're looking at renouncing, restraining attachments. We're looking at giving up clinging, grasping to things, to experiences, to people, to wanting things to be different. So if you remember the Four Noble Truths, there's the truth of suffering, of disease, of distress. There's the cause of suffering, which is clinging, grasping. There's the truth that there is a way out of this, and there's the truth that that path is the Eightfold Path. So we're going to be looking at both the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path in the next couple of talks as we tease out parts of renunciation. So other Dharma teachers use other words. Christina Feldman uses the word untangling much more frequently than she uses the word renunciation. And she says, tangles are places of suffering. So, and if you think about our own life and our own situations, tangle might be a word that's useful. And she asked an interesting question, which is, you know, maybe a part of the answer to the how do we do this, which is she asks, are our efforts to redo the tangle or to unbind and understand the tangle? So it's sort of, you know, the question is, are we rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, or are we trying to get off the Titanic? And so she talks a lot about that. She also talks about the how being a practice of practicing the positive, so that generosity can be seen as a practice that lessens greed, and metta can be seen as a practice that lessens hate. So this is something that Mary Stone is going to be talking about next week during her Dharma talk. Joseph Goldstein uses the word non-addiction and asks, what might we be addicted to, what might we be controlled by, what we might be holding on to, what might be clinging, what we be grasping, what are we feeding on? So that's another way of coming at this topic. Aya Kema said, quote, one must realize once and for all that more is not better. It is impossible to come to an end of more. There is always something beyond it. But it is certainly possible to come to the end of less, which is a much more sensible approach. End quote. I tell you, that Aya Kema, she nails it. All right. So the experiences of happiness and renunciation can sound like opposite experiences. Certainly, I mean, think about our Declaration of Independence. We Americans have the right to the pursuit of happiness. So there's a lot of energy for following some definition of happiness. But what we're going to investigate is, one, is pursuit a useful pursuit? Is pursuit a useful strategy? And what is happiness? What happiness are we pursuing? So for me, working with renunciation is really, it's just come down to a matter of choice. Everything is a choice. Every time we choose to do X, we're saying no to something else. And so what are we saying no to? What are we saying yes to? And I've find that a really interesting question, and I will tell you that we've been thinking about this subject for months, and so I've really had a chance to work with it for a while. And so this possibility of choice, I find very fruitful as one of the how, you know, kind of strategies. So, and it really has brought me again and again to the question that Mary Oliver talks about in her poem, A Summer's Day, which is, just what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? That's really what we're going to be talking about. So that's what I have to say tonight as an introduction of where we might go with this. So why don't we just sit for a minute, and then we'll move on to y'all talking. So just a couple deep breaths. Just be aware of your body, the energy in your mind. Questions that are swirling, phrases that are swirling, words of interest. And breathe. So when we developed the idea of the practice period 4 years ago, one of the big drivers for us was that we wanted to be able to have Dharma conversations with people in our Dharma hall. And it's really pretty easy before or after meditation to say, how are things going? You know, what trips are you taking, of which I'm always interested? Mm-hmm. You know, how are the kids? But it's a little harder to actually have conversations about the Dharma. And so that's what we want to do now. So this is what I'm going to ask you to divide into groups of three. Doesn't matter whether you know each other or not, because you will soon. So once you're divided into groups of three, then I'll tell you what happens next. But it gets a little chaotic. And there's going to be at least four people who must be together, and I'm going to try and break them apart, but we'll see what happens. So if you would divide into, and just sort of get close enough to talk. Or not.
I think in our group discovered we've already renounced quite a few things in our lives, and they've had positive outcomes, but at the time it seemed like the end of the world when we were going through it.
Interesting. It is, you know, just raising the question and reflecting. I had the same experience. Yeah, thanks, Greg.
I hadn't thought of it until Greg said it, but I renounced my landline. I didn't think I could handle it. And it was nothing. It's a silly, it seems like a silly thing, but I know Greg said he's already renounced a lot.
Right. Yeah. And really, I think it'll be interesting, as I was thinking about that, Greg, I was thinking about this this framework that the Buddha talks about sort of looking at the drawbacks of something and the rewards of something, both the drawbacks and rewards of the pleasure, of whatever it is, and then the drawbacks and the rewards of letting that go. And I mean, I've been trying to bring those questions to things that I have let go to see like what my process was at the time, just thinking that that might be an aid for future adventures. So yeah, thank you. Keith?
I think, you know, we kind of had a sense that, you know, there's a reason why we would choose to let something go. And that reason is it's not serving us well. It's hindering us or holding us back. I think once we internalize or understand that and believe that, it's a little easier to let the thing go. Oh, it's not good for me. Oh, I'm paying a price for that thing.
Right. And the clearer we can be on what that price might be, probably the more successful we'll be in changing that. So, yeah. Carrie?
Oh. we were talking about letting go and talking a little bit about letting go of physical things, in, you know, our mature world that we live in, but also letting go of beliefs and ideas and ways of being. That is probably more difficult than letting go of physical things.
Right. And ultimately, you know, from the Buddhist perspective, renunciation is an action of the mind, you know, not necessarily, I mean, it may manifest in, you know, some things we do or don't do, but the ultimate clinging is in our mind, and so, you know, it is a renunciation, it is an action of mind, so, yeah, but definitely part of it, yeah.
Caroline? Oh, I didn't say this in our group, but I just was thinking about it, and it came up earlier this evening with another conversation, but many things that I feel, say, maybe even addicted to, really want to talk to somebody once a week, whatever thing, I really need this or that, but these are perceptions in my mind, and, you know, as the Buddha said, perception is one of those, the five khandhas, and we can shift our perception. You know, we can learn to see things differently on purpose. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I was saying that I was doing with my mental thoughts that I knew were going to lead only downhill into bad things. Is hard to develop that, and that's
one thing. Yeah. Thank you.
Perception.
Yes. Thank you very much. Yeah.